Good morning, you're on TalkBack.
Hello, hello. Can you
hello.
Hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, fantastic. I was able to get in right away. I thought I'd be put in a line in a queue. This is Dan Stewart from Evansville, Indiana. Hope you guys don't mind someone from out of state calling.
What services would you cut out in Keene?
Hi, Dan. Yeah, that's a good question. What would you cut out in Keene?
What I cut out in Keene? Oh, I'm so glad that I'm talking to two politicians right now. I am on the edge of my seat. What I would like to do is, when we say cut out, I don't mean like cut out, like end that service. I mean take it and hand it over to the private sector, people that can handle it, and a much, much better. I know you're like, your eyes glaze over. Much, much better, more efficient. And I know how this could be handled on a neighborhood level. We kick it all the way down to the neighborhood level. We get the state out of the business so they don't get their cut. We get the federal government out of it so they don't get their cut and stuff. So, you know, so we make it as unmafia-like as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So we want to keep that in mind. That we don't want to be like the mafia. We want to be like everybody else that produces things out there in the community, people that go and make things that folks want, and here's how you do it. When you move into a neighborhood, you go and you get your best deal from people. You say, hey, the neighborhood association, and still on the neighborhood association level, of course, neighborhood association says, well, here's our fire service that we offer. Here's our competing police or services, and not police like we know right now. We're talking about like good old-fashioned security. If you want a little bit more security, you want somebody walking up and down in front of your street, pay a little bit more. If you just want a guy driving around your neighborhood, and it'll get rid of that crime and stuff, that pesky old crime that we always say, oh, we don't like the crime. Well, guess what? Here's a way to do it. Here's a way to where...
Yeah, I don't think many people would really agree with you. Sounds more like a commune to me.
So do you think all the neighborhoods
How about that fellow that was killed on the BART trains and stuff like that? Do you think he might want to agree with me and stuff? He was an unarmed man that was basically handcuffed and boom.
Well, how are they doing it in your community? Are they doing that? Neighborhood associations creating their own constable force?
Well, they could.
But are they?
Why not turn it over to them?
Are they doing that there?
Are they doing that? I don't know. I know that in San Francisco, which is not too far from Oakland, where the fellow was shot, they have private police. Are they doing it there? Yes, sir, they are.
So do you think that neighborhoods should turn into, like, very much like home associations or homeowners associations or condominium associations,
mm-hmm.
so that they have a little government of their own, if you will, with elected
mm-hmm.
directors,
mm-hmm.
and they pay a certain amount, for, and then the certain things are done, like the plowing is done and the lawn is done.
Where would you house the equipment? And where would you put the fire station? Would it be in your neighborhood or...
Well, wherever they feel that the market would need.
Could you afford a fire station in every neighborhood?
Oh, yes, we could. We definitely could, because we would cut. See, you guys keep on thinking that old paradigm. And I'm not trying to say you guys are adherents to any mafia thing, but I'm just saying that you've never been shown.
Well, glad you said that.
But I'm just saying that we're doing it like the mafia is right now. We're just saying, oh, well, we got to kick up to... So Tony Soprano here, and he's got to kick up some to the New York Mafia and all that stuff, and that's not a way to do it. That is not a way to do it. It's getting us crummy service. You know, they've got like this kind of foam that you can spray on stuff that the fire department can use. I mean, innovation, technology, and stuff. You can get all kinds of really, really good, services from a fire department that would be privatized.
As you know, that I always disagree with Free Staters who call in, and it's because I think if you start getting, like, police departments, if you have 14 police departments, if you break the city into 14 neighborhoods, and you have 14 police departments, they're going to be vying with each other, just as the, you know, now when you have the local and the state and that sort of thing, you get...
It just doesn't work,
Cynthia.
Even on an economic level, it just wouldn't work. It wouldn't be efficient. You wouldn't be able to have the same level of training necessarily. How would each one talk to the other?
Right.
Would there be cooperation? Where would you locate the facilities? You would have to duplicate, you know, the administrative structure or the supervisory structure. It's almost, you know, I certainly want to be respectful to the caller, but I can't even imagine how something like that would work. And then the references to the mafia and things like that, it's just, it's just sad. But, you know, this country has always had a conflict between public and administration.
Right.
And we always will. There's the public aspect of what we do and the administrative side of what we do. And we try very hard to meld the two. But oftentimes, that which is public and that which is administrative do have a tension. But
right.
It certainly doesn't go to the extent that we're talking about here. As a matter of fact, if we're mindful of it, we can make it work for us.
Right. But thank you for calling, Dan. And I hope the weather's good out there in Indiana. So... 357-1290, 1-866-357-1290. Good morning, you're on TalkBack.
Hey guys, it's Ian from freekeen.com. How are you today?
Hi. I'm fine.
I don't know Dan too well, but I don't think that he did a very good job of describing what a free market system would look like. I mean, he described his vision of it, which may or may not actually end up being the case. I happen to agree with you, John, that economy of scale is very important when you're talking about providing services at that level to people. And I think that in the absence of coercion, which is really the key fundamental aspect of what a lot of liberty-oriented people are talking about, in the absence of coercion, the marketplace would orient itself in whatever way that best serve and best function for the community. So if it would be most efficient, then there would be, however many fire stations would need be. If it's one, it's one. If it's two, it's two. The market decides on these kinds of things on its own.
Ian, I don't know what's going on, but we can barely hear you.
Yeah, you got a really bad connection, Ian.
Are you there?
He's going to call us back.
Okay, all right.
He had a bad connection.
357-1290, 1-866-357-1290. Good morning, you're on TalkBack.
Well, good morning. It's your other favorite caller, Sam. How are you?
Fine, thank you. You're ganging up on us.
Hey, I posted a video out on Free King, Cynthia, that I'd like to point you to. And it was from the Milford District or Milford Municipal Court earlier this week at one of the trials. I went there as a member of the press to record the proceedings.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much got treated the same way I've been treated here in Keene, that other activists have reported out in the Seacoast. I had public officials who told me I couldn't film in the lobby of a public building. They also,
do you think there's a message here?
I'm sorry?
Do you think there's a message here?
What do you mean by a message?
Well, do you think they're trying to send a message?
No, I simply think that they're... over the years, they have forgotten, they've just grown further and further away from what the law says they're required to do, and they've started taking shortcuts, and you have the bailiffs in there who actually told me that their job is to do whatever the judge tells them to do, and that's something I've heard in Plano as well and so forth. And
right.
That's just not the way the system's designed to set up. They sent me over to get a motion, which is essentially turning freedom of the press into a privilege, something that I have to beg the judge for to get, rather than a right, which is something you just exercise without getting permission. And the clerks, when I asked their name, she told me, we're not giving out names, and walked away from me. So they refused to identify themselves, and, the rules are very clear, and I laid this out in the video, that the courts are open to the public. All proceedings are open to the public. She actually called Ian and I into the courtroom for a hearing, and then the guards posted at the door, the bailiffs, would not let the public in. So our right to a public trial or to a public hearing was also denied. I pointed this out in the middle of the hearing. The judge did nothing about it. And, this is a fight that I'm going to take up because cameras are going to be in the courtroom, and there's a trial coming up here in Keene. I'd love to have some city councilors out to see how these bureaucrats are acting, and that's all.
Well, keep us posted on that. Thanks for calling. 357-1290, 1-866-357-1290. Good morning. You're on TalkBack.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. We've got about 2 minutes.
Okay.
Sorry, the end of the hour.
I wanted to comment on what Dan was saying earlier, in that I believe that his vision there is pretty inaccurate as far as what the marketplace would do. I agree with John. I think that the economies of scale are very important when you're talking about providing services, on a city level, when you're talking about fire protection, police protection, that sort of thing. And I think that what Dan was not really communicating very well is that the marketplace will decide how to handle all of this. So if it's most efficient to have one fire department for the whole city, then that's what will happen in the, you know, in the free market situation.
Right.
If it's most efficient to have two, then that's what will happen. So, you know, if what he wants for his vision is private little neighborhoods making decisions for themselves, he's certainly free to get together with his neighbors and do something like that. But otherwise, we can order our services from whoever it is that's offering them in the marketplace, wherever it is they might be located. So I think the central point that a lot of liberty-oriented people are making is that it's the coercion that's the problem. It's not the problem with, you know, fire service. Who doesn't want fire service for their home?
Right.
Who doesn't want to have the roads cleared and salt sprayed down? All of these things would be done in the marketplace because there's demand for them. The only thing is, what I think people like me are trying to do is to convince you guys to essentially somehow figure out a way to change from being a coercive, essentially a violent monopoly, to another market-based business, with just like the rest of us. So I hope that helps clarify what, you know, the marketplace would be as compared to what Dan was pointing out as to what he thought his vision would be. I think that we cannot predict what the marketplace will exactly look like, but we can say that people who are willing to provide products and services will be there providing them, and people will be buying them.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, bye-bye now. Good morning, you're on TalkBack.
Hello, this is Lauren from Winchester. Cynthia and John, I hope you have a window in the studio because it's a beautiful day.
Oh, that's nice. Good.
Thank you, Lauren.
Is it warming up?
Oh, yeah, it's wonderful out here.
Oh.
So I had a question about the transparency of the justice system. I heard a caller call in a week or two back and asked about getting cameras in the public trials. It's a public trial. I figured it was logical. The more people to watch it, the better. So, have you looked into why they're not letting cameras in?
Now, actually, I did say that I would call Judge Burke, and I didn't do that. I don't really have an excuse except that I've had an awful lot going on in my private life, and I just didn't get a chance to do that. But I hope to do that this week and just find out why they're not allowing it.
Okay, I can understand the personal busyness thing there. Also, Judge Burke is kind of like a hard guy to get hold of. I have like an invitation to an awards dinner for him where the New Hampshire Uncall, just like you do, I guess.
Yeah, I guess that's the only way. I don't know. I don't even know if he's listed, if his home phone is listed in the phone book. I don't know.
I have no idea.
But good luck. Thank you. 357-1290, 1-866-357-1290. Good morning, you're on TalkBack.
Hey, this is Ian with Freekeen.com. I'm interrupting this TalkBack archive to point something out to you. I'm going to play that last few seconds again and listen closely. That last few seconds may have sounded a little confusing. Allow me to explain what happened. Lauren was attempting to promote her event that she has coming up on Sunday, March 22nd at 5 p.m. at Vendetta in Keene. The purpose of the event is to give Judge Burke an award for increasing the recruiting numbers for the Free State Project, specifically for movers to Keene. Lauren was attempting to explain that, and for whatever reason, the TalkBack crew decided to dump her call. That's why you hear a quick break. That's why you hear a quick change in the audio while she's speaking, and it doesn't make much sense. After that, you can hear the speed of the show slow down as their dump machine begins to rebuild the delay. So I just wanted to explain what was going on. We'll replay that here just so you can hear it again.
The New Hampshire Uncall, just like you do, I guess.
Yeah, I guess that's the only way. I don't know. I don't even know if he's listed, if his home phone is listed in the phone book. I don't know.
I have no idea.
But good luck. Thank you. 357-1290, 1-866-357-1290. Good morning, you're on TalkBack.
Good morning, Cynthia. It's Sam again.
Good morning.
You had asked a question about the red light cameras and who are these people, and I'm calling in to tell you I'm one of the people who drives around Keene, and I use common sense in my driving. Now, that means if I'm coming up to a stop sign where I can clearly see that there are no other cars at the intersection, I'm not going to slow down and come to a complete stop because there's really no reason for me to.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing, if I'm sitting at a red light where there's no cars coming back and forth, and the light's red, it's clearly it's safe for me to go through. I'm just going to drive through that light because, you know, it's I think people have this mentality, like the ones calling in saying, this is out of control, we got to stop this. They have this mentality that whatever the state says is right and that everybody should follow the laws and nobody should think for themselves. Let the government do your thinking for you and they'll tell you when you can stop and when you can go and so forth. And I'm not really interested in having the government run my life. So, you know, I'm probably one of the drivers that they have seen and are freaking out about. Now, the red light cameras, the reason there's a big problem with those is in America, under your system, there's a guaranteed right to face your accuser. How do you face a camera? How do you question your accuser when it's a machine?
Well, I don't know.
You can't. So red light cameras are unconstitutional on its face, and that goes back to what we were talking about earlier in the courts, and how do they get so out of control? It's little steps like this, little incremental changes that ratchet up the control and the force that they exert over others. And red light cameras, and you know, today's calls are just one example of that process working the way government does, to inefficiently take more and more freedoms and rights away from people over time.
Well, I guess that I understand there's a bill in the House to re-legalize them, if you will. I don't know. John's kind of shrugging, too. But that's what I understand. So we'll see what happens with that and have this discussion again. Thank you. Good morning. You're on TalkBack.
Good morning. You know, I was just listening to the caller before this last one talk about these cameras. And, you know, actually, I'm not sure whether I think they're a good idea or not. Generally, I know in some countries, in Europe, they're sort of ubiquitous, and I think they're legitimate privacy concerns. But, you know, I just am always struck by these so-called freedom activists' inability to just use logic in anything but a sort of, well, it's not really logic, but it's a sort of tendentious type of rhetoric. For instance, the camera is not the accuser. The camera is a device that is used by the potential accuser,
exactly,
which would be the state. You know, it's just an evidence gathering.
Or the municipality.
Device. It's not. So you know, it's thoroughly constitutional because the entity, the state, would be using the evidence gathered from said camera to mount their case. And then you would face that accuser. But I don't know. I sometimes wonder with these folks, they get so intoxicated by their buzzwords, they don't quite think through what's coming out of their mouth. I don't quite know what the deal is there.
Well, I can't explain. I don't even want to try. So
yeah.